You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Camping on city sidewalks and in parks is about to get more difficult. The LA City Council voted today on a new ordinance restricting where homeless people can sit and sleep and store their belongings. The proposal drew controversy the first time around and today, too, among people listening in.
Families should be able to safely walk down any street in the city and not have to move into the roadway. The disabled should not be blocked. Our parks should be clean and usable for recreation. And businesses should not have their storefronts blocked by trash and other belongings. This crisis has gone too far and too long and must be fixed.
That's Stuart Waldman, among dozens of people who called into the meeting to weigh in ahead of the vote. And so did opponents like Richie Sergenko.
You guys all want to criminalize, homelessness in Los Angeles, basically saying that poor people just existing will be criminalized. This law unfairly paints unhoused people as a threat to children and the public. The lack of appropriate housing is the real threat to public safety.
Now, the anti-camping measure already passed 13-2 earlier this month. Because the vote was not unanimous, it had to come back today for a second vote. It passed today with the exact same tally, 13-2. KCRW reporter Anna Scott, who covers housing and homelessness, is here to break down the new rules. Hi, Anna.
Hey, Steve.
So big picture, what's the idea behind this measure and why right now?
Well, very big picture. As you know, Los Angeles, compared to other cities, has a very large number of people living outside on sidewalks, in parks, outdoors. And during the pandemic, the city largely suspended cleanups or sweeps of encampments in line with CDC guidelines and also stopped enforcing rules to take tents down during the day. And so encampments have grown. You may have noticed this all around the city, and we've seen that cause conflicts and blow up at places like Echo Park or Venice more recently. Now the city is attempting to put rules around where people can camp, new rules, in a way that balances the constitutional rights of unhoused people with the concerns about public space. Now, there's definitely disagreement about whether they've achieved that with this ordinance, but that's the idea.
All right. Well, speaking, Anna, of the rights of unhoused people, I thought that the city already had rules around street camping, but could not enforce them because of lawsuits.
Yes, that's right. And part of this ordinance is an attempt to rewrite city rules around street camping so that they're legally enforceable again.
So exactly what would this new ordinance do? I mean, sort of break it down for us.
Yeah, so it bans camping outright in some locations and then on a case-by-case basis in others. So the blanket ban is on sitting, sleeping, lying, or storing property anywhere that obstructs sidewalks, streets, blocks driveways, blocks loading docks, or anywhere within 2 feet of fire hydrants. On a case-by-case basis, the city council can ban camping around daycares, around schools, public parks, libraries, freeways, and homeless shelters. But for those locations, council members will have to get approval from their colleagues to enforce the rules at specific locations in advance and then post 2 weeks' notice in those areas so that unhoused people have time to move.
As we just identified at the beginning of the show, you know, people are very divided about this on both sides. Why are the, or what, I should say, are the big arguments for or against?
Yeah, well, the argument for this, as we were talking about before, is that this is a way to balance the rights of unhoused people with the concerns of many housed people about impassable sidewalks or encampments transforming recreational areas or creating health hazards in parks, near schools, gathering places. Now, on the flip side, people are arguing that this punishes unhoused people for being poor and will just result in fines, most likely, that they won't be able to pay, and could simply just shuffle people around while really doing nothing to get them off of the streets. And you can hear these divisions among the council members too, even though the vast majority, 13 out of 15, did vote for it. Only Nithya Raman and Mike Bonin voted against it.
And with some of these rules being applied on a case-by-case basis, Anna, it sounds like you could end up with different council districts having very different types of regulations. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. Joe Buscaino, for example, who represents San Pedro, has said that he wants to entirely eliminate sidewalk camping. And his spokesman told the LA Times today that they plan to, quote, put up a million signs and enforce this in as many locations as possible. He said during today's meeting, he would like to see even more strict rules requiring that unhoused people who are offered shelter anywhere have an obligation to take it or relocate.
If you are offered shelter, you must either move in, move along, or face a consequence.
And on the opposite side, Mike Bonin, one of the dissenters, said that by and large, the problem isn't that unhoused people don't want housing or help. It's that there are too few places for them to go in the city of LA.
People want housing. They do not want warehousing. They don't want shelter. They want housing. There are far more people who want housing than we have sufficient resources.
So, Anna, could unhoused people end up just moving around between different districts? Is that a possibility?
It's definitely a possibility. We could see very uneven enforcement of this throughout the city, and we'll just have to see.
And picking up on what Bonin said, I know the city has opened new, you know, they've got these tiny home villages. We've seen those, new shelters. Yeah, they're building new affordable housing, too. I mean, is that enough?
Well, it's not enough yet to meet the need. The last homeless count, which was done before the pandemic, found more than 41,000 people unhoused just in the city of LA. There might be more now. They didn't do a count this year. Last week, the LA Homeless Services Authority put out their annual count of shelter beds and housing units for people experiencing homelessness. And in the city, there are a lot more options than there were a few years ago, but there are still way fewer housing units and even shelter spots than there are people who are homeless.
All right. So we had the vote today, 13-2, on this anti-camping ordinance. Does it go into effect immediately? How does that work going forward?
Not immediately. Probably it will take at least a month. So next, the mayor has to sign it. He has 10 days to do that. Then the city has to publish a notice that this is taking effect. And then there's 4 weeks after that before it's implemented. So depending how long the mayor takes to sign it and how quickly that published notification happens, you know, somewhere in the ballpark of four weeks to maybe longer.
Has the mayor said anything about this publicly? Do we even know where Mayor Eric Garcetti is on all this?
Yes, his office has indicated that he is supportive of this. And so he is probably going to sign this.
All right. KCRW's Anna Scott, who covers housing and homelessness. I know, Anna, you're going to keep monitoring this as we wait for, you know, as we wait to see how this is implemented in the future. But that final vote again, 13-2 today at LA City Hall. Anna Scott, thanks.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. If you've ever played World of Warcraft or Call of Duty, you can thank Activision Blizzard. They're known for producing some of the biggest video game franchises in the world. But the gaming industry as a whole has also been at the center of some big stories about sexism and sexual harassment and lack of diversity. Well, now labor regulators here in California have filed a claim citing Activision Blizzard's failure to address a, quote, pervasive frat boy workplace culture. Those are their words, across their network of companies that led multiple women to quit and may have even contributed to one employee's suicide. Well, there's an employee walkout that's happened today at one of its workplaces in Orange County. Shannon Liao is a video games journalist at The Washington Post, and she's here with us now. Hey, Shannon.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with the initial lawsuit. How did it come to be? And what specific allegations are they up against?
So this lawsuit was the product of 2 years of investigation. So it's levied by California's Department of Fair Employment and Housing. And they received complaints and gathered 2 years of investigation to put out this lawsuit. So current and former Activision Blizzard employees spoke to this department in order to put this together. And the allegations include, as you mentioned, you know, sexism, harassment, there's gender-based pay discrimination. So women were receiving lower salaries than men with the same titles, and they were also being denied chances at promotion. And, you know, at the upper levels of management, there are less women than men by a significant ratio. The whole company is 80% men and 20% women, according to the suit. And the suit also alleges, as you alluded to, there was a suicide of a woman who went on a work trip. And there isn't much detail given by the suit from there on. And we didn't get much reporting from that. But beyond that, there's also allegations of racism and harassment. There's a drinking culture at Blizzard, at Activision and Blizzard, but particularly Blizzard had bars at some of the offices. And it was very common somebody would come to work with a hangover, according to the suit. And so that is called a frat boy culture of just talking about women, making rape jokes and other jokes about women's bodies, that many employees were part of these jokes, and it just seemed normal there, is what the suit alleges.
We should mention, Shannon, that there was a study done last year by Forbes of the top 14 global gaming companies, and this study found that only 24% of those working in the gaming industry, and we're talking writ large, not just Activision Blizzard, are women. You said it's about 80-20 men women at Activision Blizzard, right?
Right. And I should also specify that, that includes the entire company, including, public relations, human resources, all different departments. And then there are teams within Activision Blizzard working on games. Different teams have even less women than that. And there might be just one woman on a particular team.
So let's talk about what the company, it issued a public statement in response to these allegations, right? To this lawsuit. What did it say?
So Activision Blizzard said, in cases related to misconduct, action was taken to address the issue. The picture the DFEH, the department from California, paints is not the Blizzard workplace of today. And then internally, there was, an email that J. Allen Brack sent out to the entire company saying, he doesn't stand for this kind of stuff. And also that employees, feeling that they have a story to share, they should report it to HR. But what was really, really off-putting was the chief compliance officer, Francis Townsend, coming out with the email saying that these stories are outdated and untrue and paint a distorted picture of the company. Because Francis Townsend had started at the company not too long ago. And for a lot of the employees at Blizzard, it was very jarring to hear her say that when she maybe doesn't know if they're true or not. So over 2,600 current and former Blizzard employees have signed this letter condemning the response from Blizzard management, because that shows a lack of belief in the women who have come forward and also the men who have come forward.
It should be noted that the headquarters for Activision Blizzard, or at least Activision, is in Santa Monica, but there's a walkout that happened over at Blizzard's headquarters down in Irvine. This is one company,
right?
But they were two companies that merged together a while back.
Yes. So Activision Blizzard is maybe the fifth biggest gaming company in the world. They're worth billions and billions of dollars. They have Activision, which owns Call of Duty, and then they also have merged with Blizzard, which owns World of Warcraft.
How hopeful are employees, Shannon, that their demands will be met? I mean, the changes, it seems like it's just ensconced in the whole gaming industry.
Right. You're absolutely right. This has not just happened to Activision Blizzard. It's also, spanned across the entire industry. In particular, for this case, in staging this walkout, Blizzard employees are asking for specific demands, which is more than just, firing a couple of bad apples here and there. And that is more progress than what we've seen in the past. Whether or not those demands will be met is another story. But also the fact that California's department is leveling this lawsuit is a huge deal. We haven't seen many of these lawsuits in the past from California. And so it's definitely a step forward. And we can just keep monitoring the situation to see whether or not change will really happen.
We're certainly in a time right now where people are advocating for more diversity in the workplace, and certainly not to just be jerks. That's what some of these tales are. Do you think that there's a chance that this could change the gaming industry as a whole, maybe invite more women to work in the workplace there, or more people of color?
So that is definitely a question I've been asking, to see how much change they think could come from this lawsuit and from employees taking a stand. And I will say that the conversation has shifted from what it was even just a couple of years ago, where it was like, oh, if we fire, you know, these three people who were harassing women, then we're good. And then we can move on from that. It's become more of a, you know, an audit of everything going on within the company. There's a request for systemic change. Obviously, this lawsuit is in its beginning stages. The Department of Fair Employment and Housing is still looking to gather evidence. Even though it's already investigated this for 2 years, they're still talking to even more people. From there, the lawsuit will have to go perhaps to court and then maybe to trial, and that could take years. And from that, you know, the lawsuit is asking for injunctive relief and it's asking for damages. It isn't going to ask for, you know, complete change for the entire industry. But depending on how this lawsuit is perceived, and even just now as we're talking about it and as the public pays more attention, other companies across the industry might also take note and realize that maybe this is also happening within their closed doors and try to enact some policies before word gets out that they are also going through the same thing. It's definitely, you know, incremental change over time.
Talk a little bit about how the feeling is inside one of these, you know, organizations, especially, you know, Activision Blizzard, where, I mean, employees, as you mentioned, have demands. They obviously want change, or at least many of them want change. What are they saying? How are they feeling about all this?
Right. That's a great question. First of all, the lawsuit didn't come as a surprise to a lot of people. They said that they had seen or heard, you know, stories like this, and that women were receiving less money, that they were not getting promotions. And there was so few women at this company, and many of them were being sexually harassed. Especially women were aware of this happening to other women around them and to themselves. A lot of, you know, the walkout and the open letter has been sparked by employees' anger over how management has responded to the lawsuit. It's been a lot of anger, it's been a lot of frustration, and a lot of people are coming forward with their stories, with their real names attached, because they think that it's the time to speak up, and it's no longer okay to be silent.
Shannon Liao, video games journalist over at The Washington Post, has been reporting on all things Activision Blizzard the past couple of weeks. Shannon, thanks for your take on this and for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Moving along now with Greater LA on KCRW, Steve Chiatakis here. Gearing up for a busy weekend in the art world, by the way. A couple of in-person art fairs are taking place in LA, along with a special weekend of gallery events and exhibitions. Here to talk about it is our art insider, Lindsay Preston Zappas, founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah, let's talk about this busy weekend.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, one show is called Felix. And it's,
yeah.
Now correct me if I'm wrong, it's at a swimming pool?
More or less. So the fair is at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, which does include a swimming pool. So this hotel, you've probably heard of it, Steve. It's the oldest hotel in LA. It has this really long history with the Hollywood and celebrities. You know, so Felix popped up a few years ago, and rather than hosting its fair at the typical convention center or kind of, you know, what we think of with art fairs, like a big tent with white walled booths and kind of, you know, everyone looks the same, at Felix, the hotel rooms become the fair booths. So art is installed in the bathrooms and some of them use the dressers and, you know, kind of the context of the room itself. And this year, they're going to be using the ground floor rooms that all, they call them cabanas, because they kind of open out into the pool. So there's going to be this very indoor-outdoor feeling centered around a swimming pool, which feels very LA, you know. And yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
What are you looking forward to seeing there? You said that the rooms are sort of the exhibition spaces, and you've got the swimming pool there. What will we see inside and out?
I did see a new sculpture by an artist, Naveen Mahmood, that will be at M&B Gallery. And it's kind of these a set of oversized wax lips, like, you know, those wax lips you used to wear as a kid. And it's set on top of a plastic chair. So it's this very kind of surrealist, fun work. And I've been following her for a while, so I'm excited to check that out. I also noticed that Parker Gallery will have some new ceramic works by the ceramicist Melvino Goretti, which I'm super excited to see. He's been living and working in LA for decades and was part of the Studio Watts workshop here in the 60s. And it's exciting to see kind of new contemporary work by him. It's really over the top and spirited.
All right. The other show that we're talking about is the LA Art Show, which, you know, this has been going on at the Convention Center. It's a longer standing fair. What are you excited about there?
Yeah. So the fair is, you know, a little bit of a more old school traditional vibe. This is the 26th year. So this fair has really been around for a while. But, you know, I think to counteract the fact that it's a bit older, they're really trying to focus this year on digital art and this new kind of hype, which is the NFT or non-fungible token. So this is like a type of cryptocurrency that's kind of, you know, making its way into the art world. And the LA Art Show is claiming this year to be the first in-person art fair to include NFTs kind of on the floor of the fair, sort of being exhibited.
One show that we're not talking about this weekend is Freeze, right? Weren't they supposed to have an in-person fair this weekend as well? But that got booted, right?
Yeah, so they were planning to, and it was kind of like, are they, aren't they, you know? And then they announced in April that they were canceling due to logistics and also COVID concerns. But they pivoted quickly, perhaps with all of these other kind of fairs and events going on this weekend. And they will be presenting Freeze Viewing Room Los Angeles, which is opening also this weekend.
All right. And then we have also Gallery Weekend Los Angeles. This is something new, right? This is a host of events and exhibitions that really celebrates the Angelino art scene. Talk about that.
Exactly. This is the very first gallery weekend. So I'm really excited to see how this kind of folds out. So there are 70 participating galleries all around LA. And the goal is really to encourage in-person viewing after this year that a lot of us weren't going out into the world. A lot of the galleries and museums were closed. So in addition to all the galleries just opening their doors, there's going to be a lot of special events like openings, talks, and performances. And then every day, they're kind of focusing on a different region. So starting today, the West Side is really focused on. And there's an online map on their website where you can really plan your route to all the West Side galleries. And then every day of the event, they'll kind of move towards different regions like the East, North, and Central. So you can really plan out your route to try and tackle all of these 70 galleries in 4 days.
Mm. Do you need tickets for all of these? I mean, what we talked about at the Roosevelt and these other events?
Right. So the gallery weekend is totally free, which I think will attract a lot of people. Again, it's just at galleries. So these are places that are kind of civic spaces that are free. And I hope it really encourages, you know, the public to go to these spaces and go to them in the future, not just on this weekend. But then the two fairs, Felix and the LA Art Show, do require tickets. And I do know that Felix is even requiring proof of vaccination. So it's best to kind of look into all those details on their websites before heading over.
And there, of course, is that mask mandate in LA County that continues as well. So if you're going inside, take the mask with you.
Definitely. And that includes Gallery Weekend and all the galleries. Definitely come with your mask in hand.
Lots to explore. Lindsay Preston Zapp is founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, that's all the time we have for this evening. Whew, what a show. Tomorrow, off to a street corner in Koreatown, where a regular variety show draws a crowd. There is a stage there, puppets, music, a lot going on, but the star of the show is a mystery. And that, by the way, all on purpose. That's tomorrow on GLA. Hope you can join us. Check out the stories of the day. Easily subscribe to the podcast, too, at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us how we're doing. Share your thoughts. Share your story ideas. kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Jackie Sedley, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Sue Margulies, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Tom, Mike Vogel. They all had hands and ears on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your ears tonight, and have a great night.